remember, Abraham Lincoln didn't die in vain. He died in Washington, D.C.
Korea, Vietnam, El Salvador, the Middle East.
See, American enemy says it's an honor to die in a war that is a politician's lie. American enemy that makes me watch TV. See how they unplug people every day, they say. That's not what you can do for your country. What your country been doing to you. That's not what you can do for your country. What your country been doing to you.
Now here's a contingent of our heroic POWs, many of whom spent years in prison in Hanoi courageously resisting the persistent efforts of their North Vietnamese captors to brainwash them into thinking that the United States is run by a tiny clique of criminals dominated by powerful business interests, bankrolled by huge monopolistic corporations, and working hand in glove with the CIA in a campaign of intrigue at home and abroad.
Jesus, why did they bomb?
Oh, I don't know, Barbara.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Horrendo Revolver, and welcome to Wake Up America. This evening on Wake Up America, we're going to take an in-depth look at the recording industry. Now, recently, the industry has undergone severe criticism for its alleged use of drugs, sex, and payola in the sale and promotion of records. Now, the building I'm standing in front of right now is Monster Recording Studios, where all the sounds of Shape the 60s were recorded. And we're going to walk inside the studio tonight, visit one of the sessions, just drop in unexpectedly, unannounced, and see what goes on. So here we go, we're going to open the door now and let the chips fall where they may.
Hold it. Security here. Where do you think you're going?
Excuse me, sir. I'm Horrendo Revolver, and these are my cameramen, and we're doing an expose on the recording industry, and we just want to drop into one of the sessions unannounced to see what goes on.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, sir. Okay, guys, let's go. Okay, we're gonna just walk into the first session that we see. Oh, there's a red light on now. That means a session's in session. Okay, guys, let's hit it. We're going right through that door. This is Surrender Revolver out here on the fire escape. And there's a magnificent view of the city that we thought you folks would like to see before we go back in the studios and have a great expose on the recording industry. Okay, folks, we're back inside the hallway now. And as you can hear, there's a session going on behind that door. It sounds very much like one of those English groups. So we're going to go through that door and see what's going on right now.
Oh, those burritos.
Hey, I wouldn't go in there if I was you, man.
Oh, excuse me. Could you tell us, where is there a session in this studio?
Studio C, man. It's happening, yeah.
Oh, thanks a lot. Let's see. Studio C. Studio C. Oh, there it is, right over there next to Studio A. Come on, guys, let's go in. Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen. There's a session happening here, all right. We're just going to walk around and talk to some people now. Let's see. That man over there behind the board with a funny hat and a beard looks like the producer. Let's talk to him. Excuse me, sir. I'm Horrendo Revolver. And we're
here
to do
a... man, where you dudes been? Man, you've been hanging us up.
Well, we've been on the fire escaping in the bathroom.
Yeah, well, never mind all that. Now, which one's the tenor? You the tenor? Yeah, well, listen, here's your part. Sweet soul sounds are stirring my soul. You got that?
Wait a minute, sir. I don't think you understand. I'm Horrendo Revolver.
I don't understand. Look, dude, I'm the producer. I understand everything. You don't understand. Here's your part, sucker. Now get over there and sing it. Sweet soul sounds are stirring my soul.
Well, okay. Sweet soul sounds are stirring my soul.
Yeah, that's great, man. Only let's try it without the slobber this time.
Wait a minute, sir. I don't think you understand. I'm Horrendo Revolver from WHIC.
Oh, man. You a jock. Oh, I thought you was a background singer, man. Hey, listen, I'm Needmo. Needmo Tracks, man. I'm the producer here. Hey, listen, what do you need, man? Anything you want, you got, brother. You want some coke? I got some dynamite blow for you. Want a little toot for this note? It's good, man. It's pharmaceutical. You blow your head off, man.
No, thank you.
What do you want, some smoke? Hey, I got some dynamite Jamaican flower tops, man. It one joint, that's right. Let's just roll the man a joint.
Well, I'm sure flower tops are very pretty, but what we're really after,
sir... Right. I'm sorry, man. I should have started off with that. You want a broad. Right. Hey, you, baby. Yeah, you. Come on over here. Listen, you heard a deep throat? This is a sister, sore throat. Man, be careful with her. She was at a big promotion convention, so she's a little tired, but she's a dynamite broad. Hey, baby, take care of her. Take care of, what's your name?
Horrendo Revolver.
Take care of Horace for me, baby. Hey, but listen, man, before you get hung up with the broad, I want you to give a listen to this Monster Smash dynamite hit we've been working on, man. This tune is a monster, man. This sucker is so bad, it ought to jump on the charts at number one with a bullet. With your help, of course, you know what I mean. Hey, but listen, man, really, this tune is different. It's a cowboy tune. Man, do you like country and western music?
Oh, sure, I think it's super.
Well, let's give a listen to this. Lester, let's do another take.
Take 48.
I will survive in my five, I will survive. goodness. It's the most beautiful little thing I've ever seen in my life. It's blue on the outside and all creamy on the interior. Yeah, I can't bring myself to smash it. So I take it for a ride on a sunny summer Sunday afternoon.
You're tuned in to the 91.5 FM airwaves of WMFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform Non-Commercial Community Radio. Or maybe you're listening on our web stream at WMFO.org. Or even possibly you've managed to score this episode as a podcast. In any case, our theme this week is America, as we commemorate the 4th of July holiday with our featured artists, the Presidents of the United States of America, who began and ended that last set, starting off with Dune Buggy from their first eponymously named album. And then we heard a 3-something-minute piece from the American classical composer Aaron Copland, his Fanfare for the Common Man for brass and percussion, from his Symphony No. 3. And then it was a sonic montage called USA in the USA by Chuck U and various artists, most particularly the Avengers. The American comedy duo of Cheech and Chong was next with their piece Wake Up America. And then we finished things off with a really rocking song from the second Presidents of the United States of America album, Mach 5, which was the name of the speed racer car. And if you were paying attention to the lyrics, you'd understand that song was about a little boy and his matchbox car and the playing around he did with it, imagining it was something a little bit bigger. Meanwhile, right now, we're in the middle of a summer cornfield, as recorded by Irv Ty Bell and released on his Environment 7 ambience album of 1976. In the next set, all our music is going to be performed by Native American artist R. Carlos Nakai, who plays two kinds of Native American flutes, including one made out of bass cedar. And then, overlaid on top, I'm going to be mixing in one of the most important American speeches ever, President Dwight Eisenhower's farewell address to the nation, which he delivered to the American people and the rest of the world in a television broadcast on January 17th, 1961, right before handing over the reins of office to a much younger guy, John F. Kennedy. I believe that Eisenhower was one of the best U.S. presidents ever. Not that he didn't make mistakes, particularly in some foreign policy, but I believe he was the last U.S. president to have the highest ethical standards and moral sensibility, as well as being a highly effective leader who could get things done in large organizations, bureaucracies, leading people. Looking over history, President Jimmy Carter was certainly a very ethical person, but that wasn't enough to make him be a really effective leader of this country. We could go down the list of presidents, particularly after that, but I don't think you're going to find that combination of integrity and competence in any of the presidents that followed. Eisenhower wasn't the greatest orator. He stumbles a little bit in his words in this speech, but the thoughts he expressed, warning the nation about the potential influence of the military-industrial complex, a term he's often credited with coining, but all the things that he's talking about. In World War II, he served as the supreme commander of the Allied forces in Europe. He achieved the 5-star rank of general in the U.S. Army, and he planned and supervised the D-Day invasion of Normandy. Nobody would call him a peace-loving liberal, as if that's some sort of denigration. But both the Republicans and the Democrats wanted him to run for president underneath their party banner. When was the last time something like that happened, huh? In any case, his farewell address to the nation is one of the two most important speeches he gave during his presidency, his so-called bookend speeches. After the death of Joseph Stalin in March 1963, he gave his Chance for Peace speech, in which he tried to stave off a nuclear arms race with the Soviet Union and suggested that, well, maybe we could just all get along, make people's lives better. And in this speech, on the other side of his double-term presidency, a primary point that he makes is how much money it costs to spend on arms, weapons, planes, and he compares that to the hospitals and schools and highways that could be built instead with those same resources. As I said, Eisenhower wasn't the greatest orator, but the thoughts he was expressing were some of the best ever from a United States president in this speech. So here now is a medley of 3 songs by Native American flute player R. Carlos Nakai, Alpine Dawn, Monk Monk, and Elk Meadow, overlaid with President Eisenhower's farewell address to the nation on January 17th, 1961, on the Tears of the Gods sound collage on WMFO in Medford. Tufts Freeform, non-commercial, community, and even sometimes educational radio.
Good evening, my fellow Americans. First, I should like to express my gratitude to the radio and television networks for the opportunities they have given me over the years to bring reports and messages to our nation. My special thanks go to them for the opportunity of addressing you this evening. 3 days from now, after half a century in the service of our country, I shall lay down the responsibilities of office, as, in traditional and solemn ceremony, the authority of the presidency is vested in my successor. This evening, I come to you with a message of leave-taking and farewell, and to share a few final thoughts with you, my countrymen. Like every other citizen, I wish the new president and all who will labor with him Godspeed. I pray that the coming years will be blessed with peace and prosperity for all. Our people expect their president and the Congress to find essential agreement on issues of great moment, the wise resolution of which will better shape the future of the nation. My own relations with the Congress, which began on a remote and tenuous basis, when, long ago, a member of the Senate appointed me to West Point, have since ranged to the element during the war and immediate post-war period, and finally to the mutually interdependent during these past 8 years. In this final relationship, the Congress and the administration have, on most vital issues, cooperated well. To serve the nation good rather than mere partisanship, and so have assured that the business of the nation should go forward. So my official relationship with the Congress ends in a feeling, on my part, of gratitude that we have been able to do so much together. We now stand 10 years past the midpoint of a century that has witnessed 4 major wars among great nations. 3 of these involved our own country. Despite these holocausts, America is today the strongest, the most influential, and most productive nation in the world. Understandably proud of this preeminence, we yet realize that America's leadership and prestige depend not merely upon our unmatched material progress, riches, and military strength, but on how we use our power in the interest of world peace and human betterment. Throughout America's adventure in free government, our basic purposes have been to keep the peace, to foster progress in human achievement, and to enhance liberty, dignity, and integrity among peoples and among nations. To strive for less would be unworthy of a free and religious people. Any failure traceable to arrogance or our lack of comprehension or readiness to sacrifice would inflict upon us grievous hurt, both at home and abroad. Progress toward these noble goals is persistently threatened by the conflict now engulfing the world. It commands our whole attention, absorbs our very beings. We face a hostile ideology, global in scope, atheistic in character, ruthless in purpose, and insidious in method. Unhappily, the danger it poses promises to be of indefinite duration. To meet it successfully, there is call for not so much the emotional and transitory sacrifices of crisis, but rather those which enable us to carry forward steadily, surely, and without complaint, the burdens of a prolonged and complex struggle with liberty the stake. Only thus shall we remain, despite every provocation, on our charted course toward permanent peace and human betterment. Crises there will continue to be. In meeting them, whether foreign or domestic, great or small, there is a recurring temptation to feel that some spectacular and costly action could become the miraculous solution to all current difficulties. A huge increase in newer elements of our defenses, development of unrealistic programs to cure every ill in agriculture, a dramatic expansion in basic and applied research. These and many other possibilities, each possibly promising in itself, may be suggested as the only way to the road we wish to travel. But each proposal must be weighed in the light of a broader consideration, the need to maintain balance in and among national programs. Balance between the private and the public economy. Balance between the cost and hoped for advantages. Balance between the clearly necessary and the comfortably desirable. Balance between our essential requirements as a nation and the duties imposed by the nation upon the individual. Balance between actions of the moment and the national welfare of the future. Good judgment seeks balance in progress. Lack of it eventually finds imbalance and frustration. The record of many decades stands as proof that our people and their government have, in the main, understood these truths and have responded to them well in the face of threat and stress. But threats, new in kind or degree, constantly arise. Of these, I mention two only. A vital element in keeping the peace is our military establishment. Our arms must be mighty, ready for instant action, so that no potential aggressor may be tempted to risk his own destruction. Our military organization today bears little relation to that known of any of my predecessors in peacetime, or indeed by the fighting men of World War II or Korea. Until the latest of our world conflicts, the United States had no armaments industry. American makers of plowshares could, with time and as required, make swords as well. But we can no longer risk emergency improvisation of national defense. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. Added to this, 3.5 million men and women are directly engaged in the defense establishment. We annually spend on military security alone more than the net income of all United States corporations. Now, this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together. Akin to and largely responsible for the sweeping changes in our industrial military posture has been the technological revolution during recent decades. In this revolution, research has become central. It also becomes more formalized, complex, and costly. A steadily increasing share is conducted for, by, or at the direction of the federal government. Today, the solitary inventor, tinkering in his shop, has been overshadowed by task forces of science, in laboratories and testing fields. In the same fashion, the free university, historically the fountainhead of free ideas and scientific discovery, has experienced a revolution in the conduct of research. Partly because of the huge costs involved, a government contract becomes virtually a substitute for intellectual curiosity. For every old blackboard, there are now hundreds of new electronic computers. The prospect of domination of the nation's scholars by federal employment, project allocations, and the power of money is ever present and is gravely to be regarded. Yet in holding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite. It is the task of statesmanship to mold, to balance, and to integrate these and other forces, new and old, within the principles of our democratic system, ever aiming toward the supreme goals of our free society. Another factor in maintaining balance involves the element of time. As we peer into society's future, we, you and I, and our government, must avoid the impulse to live only for today, plundering for our own ease and convenience the precious resources of tomorrow. We cannot mortgage the material assets of our grandchildren without risking the loss also of their political and spiritual heritage. We want democracy to survive for all generations to come, not to become the insolvent famine of tomorrow. During the long lane of the history yet to be written, America knows that this world of ours, ever growing smaller, must avoid becoming a community of dreadful fear and hate, and be instead a proud confederation of mutual trust and respect. Such a confederation must be one of equals. The weakest must come to the conference table with the same confidence as do we, protected as we are by our moral, economic, and military strength. That table, though scarred by many past frustrations, cannot be abandoned for the certainty agony of disarmament of the battlefield. Disarmament with mutual honor and confidence is a continuing imperative. Together we must learn how to compose differences, not with arms, but with intellect and decent purpose. Because this need is so sharp and apparent, I confess that I lay down my official responsibilities in this field with a definite sense of disappointment. As one who has witnessed the horror and the lingering sadness of war, as one who knows that another war could utterly destroy this civilization, which has been so slowly and painfully built over thousands of years, I wish I could say tonight that a lasting peace is in sight. Happily, I can say that war has been avoided. Steady progress toward our ultimate goal has been made, but so much remains to be done. As a private citizen, I shall never cease to do what little I can to help the world advance along that road. So, in this, my last good night to you as your president, I thank you for the many opportunities you have given me for public service in war and in peace. I trust in that service, you find some things worthy. As for the rest of it, I know you will find ways to improve performance in the future. You and I, my fellow citizens, need to be strong in our faith that all nations under God will reach the goal of peace with justice. May we be ever unswerving in devotion to principle, confident but humble with power, diligent in pursuit of the nation's great goals. To all the peoples of the world, I once more give expression to America's prayerful and continuing aspiration. We pray that peoples of all faiths, all races, all nations, may have their great human needs satisfied, that those now denied opportunity shall come to enjoy it to the full, that all who yearn for freedom may experience its few spiritual blessings. Those who have freedom will understand also its heavy responsibility, that all who are insensitive to the needs of others will learn charity, and that the sources, scourges of poverty, disease, and ignorance will be made disappear from the earth, and that in the goodness of time, all peoples will come to live together in a peace guaranteed by the binding force of mutual respect and love. Now, on Friday noon, I am to become a private citizen. I am proud to do so. I look forward to it. Thank you, and good night.
We're celebrating the 4th of July holiday with a Tears of the Gods theme of America here on WMFO in Medford. We just heard a medley of three instrumental songs by R. Carlos Nakai, a Native American flute player. Those were all tracks from his Sanctuary album, released in 2003. He plays the solo Native American flute and a bass cedar flute. And then on top of that, mixed in sound collage style, President Dwight Eisenhower's farewell address to the nation, broadcast on television January 17, 1961, in which he warned about the dangers of the military-industrial complex and points out a lot of other things, like how expensive military spending is and how it could be used much more productively to improve people's lives. And as one of the greatest military leaders that the United States has ever had, I think we can trust him in his warnings to watch out for the power of the state, the military, and the corporations that make their money supplying that military-industrial machine. Our ambiance right now are the sounds of dusk at New Hope, Pennsylvania, recorded by Irv Tybell and released on his Environments 3 album of 1971. In the next set, we're going to be hearing a sound collage remix I made of Apollo 440's Rumble, Spirit of America, overlaid with some very insightful thoughts from the Rutherford Institute's John Whitehead. These are excerpts from one of his On Target talks. This was actually recorded in 2013. The piece is called The War Against Bradley Manning. And as time has passed, some of the details are a little different. Most specifically, Bradley Manning transitioned to become Chelsea Manning, and her sentence was commuted by President Obama in 2017 after she endured nearly 7 years of confinement after she was first arrested in 2010. Well, I'll give President Obama some credit for releasing Chelsea Manning. I think it's also critical to point out that as chief executive and president of the United States, he's the one who approved her prosecution and sent her to jail and solitary confinement. There have certainly been worse presidents than Obama. But before he was president, he was a professor of U.S. constitutional law. Obama's Justice Department argued all the way up to the Supreme Court the police and any other law enforcement officials should be allowed to just take people's cell phones without a warrant and do whatever they wanted. Fortunately, the Supreme Court disagreed. There are certainly some U.S. presidents who, if I had the chance to meet them, I wouldn't want to. No reasonable conversation could take place between me and, say, Donald Trump. But I'd sit down and I'd talk with Obama if I had the chance, and I'd ask him, as a black man, if he really thought a police officer could just grab somebody's cell phone and look at all the data that's on it without a warrant. As the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, John Roberts, wrote in that decision, "Modern cell phones are not just another technological convenience. With all they contain and all they may reveal, they hold for many Americans the privacies of life. The fact that technology now allows an individual to carry such information in his hand does not make the information any less worthy of the protection for which the founders fought. Our answer to the question of what police must do before searching a cell phone seized incident to an arrest is accordingly simple. Get a warrant." And in those words, Chief Justice Roberts shot down the Obama administration's argument that searching a cell phone is, quote, materially indistinguishable end quote, from physical searches, as he declared. That's like saying a ride on horseback is materially indistinguishable from a flight to the moon. I love that whole quote, and I put it in my quotes.txt file. Before we get to that remix, though, let's start off with another song from our featured artists, the Presidents of the United States of America.
Creature in its home, but I don't understand. If I find a delicate thing, I wonder how it would look split at the seams. The girls talk, say it's beautiful. I gotta poke it to know it. I gotta light it on fire.
Poke and destroy, poke and destroy, poke and destroy.
I'm a boy, I wanna poke and destroy.
Poke and destroy, poke and destroy, poke and destroy.
The world that was envisioned by the so-called founding fathers, where there would be limited government, there would be some sort of transparency so that American citizens would at least know something about what the government was doing, all that has gone by the wayside since the founding of the country and the writing of the Constitution. In the process, through a civil war, the growth of the central government in Washington, D.C., which basically runs the country now every which way you can name, especially with its new computer systems, the National Security Agency watching over all of our emails and whatever we're doing. Things that we could have known at one time, we don't really know. What's happened over a period of years is so-called enemies of the state have come about who have attempted to expose some of the problems that we see in our government, things that the government may be doing wrong, things that we are never told because things are so secret now. The average American has no idea what's going on in Washington, D.C. So we have a list of enemies of the state from Susan B. Anthony to Henry David Thoreau to Martin Luther King. Some of these people have been in prison. In fact, most of them have been in prison. Some have lost their lives in an attempt to let us know what's going on in our government, hopefully that we can maintain our freedom. One such enemy of the state is Bradley Manning. an intelligence analyst who has been targeted by the Obama administration for holding up a mirror to the bloated face of our American empire. Manning is being prosecuted for leaking classified government documents which, like the Pentagon Papers of a generation ago, exposed systemic corruption within America's military and diplomatic apparatus. The embarrassment caused by showing that the emperor has no clothes everywhere has made Bradley Manning, an American soldier, public enemy number one in the eyes of the federal government. Manning reacted as one would hope any honorable American would react when they witnessed their government acting in a manner that is corrupt, incompetent, inhumane, immoral, and, it must be said, downright evil. Manning was particularly affected by the so-called collateral murder video in which American Apache helicopter pilots can be seen firing on civilians in Iraq, including children, and as a Reuters journalist reported, the people in the van were not a threat, but merely good Samaritans. The most alarming aspect of the video, to me, Manning said, was the seeming delightful bloodlust the American troops appeared to have. To his credit, Manning refused to remain silent. He spoke out first to his superiors, he turned a deaf ear to his concerns, then he went to the New York Times and the Washington Post. They did not listen. When he still could find no one willing to alert the American people to what their government was really doing in Iraq, Afghanistan, elsewhere, he turned to WikiLeaks, which published the information. Despite not being convicted of any crime, Bradley Manning, as I say, an American soldier, had been put through a horror trip since he was first imprisoned at Quantico Marine Base. Manning has spent 1,000 days in jail without trial, a large portion of which was passed in solitary confinement, imprisoned in a windowless 6-by-12-foot cell containing a bed, a drinking fountain, and a toilet. Manning was kept under suicide and or prevention injury watch during his incarceration, largely against the advice of two psychiatrists. Under this so-called suicide watch, Manning was confined to his tiny cell for 24 hours a day and stripped of all clothing with the exception of his underwear. His prescription eyeglasses were taken away, leaving him in essential blindness, except for those limited times when he was permitted to read or watch television. In a thinly veiled attempt to harass him, guards would check in on Manning every 5 minutes, asking if he was okay. In other words, he couldn't go to sleep. Once he was finally brought before a military court, Manning pled guilty to 10 of the 20 charges brought against him, admitting that he leaked the documents because he believes the American public has a right to know about their government's misdeeds. Manning's admission guarantees that he will be put into prison for up to 20 years. However, instead of letting this lie and going ahead and putting the man in jail, government prosecutors are insisting on pressing the most serious charges against him, including, believe it or not, aiding the enemy in an attempt to imprison him for life. The government's obvious goal here is to make Bradley Manning an example. In other words, if anyone dares speak up and expose what the American military industrial empire is doing, they will be punished. So, you can get up to life in prison for exposing things that you feel are immoral, and we know are immoral now, and things that the government is doing that should be exposed. So determined is the government under the Obama administration to crucify Manning that government prosecutors plan to make the case that Manning essentially aided and abetted, unbelievably, Osama bin Laden. Manning's trial, which promises to be a government spectacle of manufactured shock and awe, will feature testimony from an anonymous Navy SEAL who took part in the raid on Osama bin Laden's compound. This SEAL reportedly will testify that he recovered some computer disk in Osama bin Laden's personal effects containing government material that may have originated from Manning's leak. The Incredibly, what the government is attempting to suggest here is that if an individual or news organization publishes information that is accessed by terrorists over the internet, for example, then those individuals or news organizations are essentially guilty of collusion with the government. Top government officials have actually justified that the Manning leaks have not basically injured the government in any serious way. So what's up here? I think we have a government, and it's obvious, that's operating in secret on many, many levels. From the National Security Agency to the Department of Homeland Security to our military, FBI, on down the list. I've written on these. You can go to our website at Rutherford.org and read the commentary that I have written. What's happened is the tentacles of our government are everywhere. They've reached into our personal lives, and if someone dares to speak up and say, this is wrong, I have information that the American people need to know. And what that is transparency in government. It keeps government free. Without it, there is no freedom in government. And if the government is successful in their campaign against this so-called enemy of the state, Bradley Manning, folks, no one's going to speak up in the future because you get life imprisonment for merely exposing corruption in government.
You've been listening to the Tears of the Gods sound collage here on WMFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform, non-commercial community radio. We've been commemorating the 4th of July here with a theme of America. We kicked off that last set with our featured artists, the Presidents of the United States of America, and Poke and Destroy from their 2004 album, Love Everybody. And then we followed that with music from Apollo 440, Rumble and Spirit of America. On top of which, I mixed excerpts from a talk by the Rutherford Institute's John Whitehead. It was from back in 2013. Excerpts from his On Target presentation, The War Against Bradley Manning. And as we discussed earlier, a number of things had changed since 2013 when that was recorded. Bradley Manning transitioned to Chelsea Manning, and in 2017, her sentence was commuted, and she was released by President Obama, basically the same guy who put her there, because if you're president of the United States, the buck stops here, as Harry S. Truman's desk sign said. And then the Presidents of the United States of America finished us off with their very cool cover version of Cleveland Rocks. It was originally written by an Englishman, Ian Hunter, and became the city's anthem. Drew Carey used the president's version as the theme for his TV show. All right, now we're closing out with our final bit of ambiance recorded by Irv Tybell. This is Dusk in the Okefenokee Swamp, which was released in 1971 on his Environments 3 album. Savoir Faire's going to be taking this week off, so no songs from the Squid Pod. We'll just have to wait and see what Rick Deckard's going to play for us next. But no matter what, it'll be some kind of freeform mix without commercials. In any case, I hope you enjoy your holiday. But remember, if you're under the influence of anything, never even think about getting behind the wheel of a motorized vehicle and driving. People die that way. And you wouldn't want to hurt yourself or anybody else, would you?